You're listening to Galaxy of Film. And welcome back to the Brain Ups of Galaxy of Film. I am, of course, your host, Max. And this week, while I am co-hostless, I am not alone, thankfully. We got a couple guest stars this week. And first up, I want to go ahead and reintroduce the man, the myth, the legend. He's been here since episode 20. He's here like every other week. He is the master of optimism. We got the man, Gamer Harold himself. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. It's really good to be back on the show, as usual.
Of course, man, of course. What's been new in your life, bro, the past couple weeks? Fill us in on the life of Harold.
So recently I've just been playing Rise of the Ronin on PlayStation. That's about it. I did get my laptop, which I'm recording from now. I can now stream from my Switch
and
play all the games I want to online on another stream, so I can't wait to do that.
Hell yeah, dude. You know what you need to stream, bro? You know what you need to get with? You gotta get with Jake and Will. That way you can stream the Battlefront Classic Collection that came out on PlayStation. Because we gotta get you into Star Wars finally, bro.
I'm so far behind on
it's films crazy. You've been coming on a Star Wars podcast for 3 years and still haven't seen Star Wars.
Yeah, I definitely need to get into it.
Yeah, you're a little bit behind, man. You're a little behind. And speaking of behind, man, it's been way too dang long since we've had this guy on. And, you know, obviously, you know, Harold, like I just mentioned, you started coming on this podcast since episode 20. Episode 19, the very episode before yours, sir, was the last time this guy had been on. It's a pleasure to get him back on here again. We got my buddy, Mark Gilman. How are you doing, bro?
I'm doing great. So glad to be back.
Of course, I'm glad to get you back on here, truly. I know a couple years ago, whenever we were discussing Ghostbusters Afterlife, and we kind of did all the Ghostbusters movies, we were hoping to really get you on there, and I was a bit crushed, man, that I couldn't. Like, I even mentioned you on the podcast, some of your opinions about some of those movies. So the fact that not only did we get a fourth Ghostbusters movie, but I got you on for this episode... Me's the damn world. I'm so thrilled. Second time's a charm, and I can't believe it worked out, man. It's weird.
Same. So glad.
But it's great to get you back on here, man. Tell us a little bit about yourself real quick to get our listeners caught up, since it's been so long.
Just a lot of life changes in the last 6 months. Just a big nerd. Love movies. Like I was saying, with Ghostbusters, it was the first birthday party that I can remember ever having. When I was three, we had a Ghostbusters party. I had real Ghostbusters as a birthday theme, in years after that. And I just picked up, I pre-ordered the Extreme Ghostbusters DVD set. It finally came out.
Yeah,
I got it from Amazon. And I've got, I'm trying to get all the episodes of the real Ghostbusters. I've got the first two seasons, but I don't have the rest as of yet, but I'm working on it.
That's what's up, dude. Love you pushing the physical media. I know that's always a thing you and I have been chatting back and forth about for years now, is comparing our collections here and there. It's cool you're getting the Ghostbusters animated stuff, man. I love that. And I'm glad Extreme Ghostbusters has a physical release finally.
Yes.
That's a funky one. Like, I remember the Game Boy Advance game for that. That was weird. Mm-hmm. That's a weird, weird era of television. But
yeah,
it's cool that it's saved. That's what matters, you know.
Exactly. And I'm glad it finally got a US release, because I bought years ago a region-free DVD player and ordered an import of the series just so that I could watch it.
Oh, really?
And now they finally got a US set of it. And unfortunately I lost that other set in a move that I had to make. So now I've got it again.
There you go, man.
That's great.
Full circle, full ecto circle. I love it. But we also got a newcomer here to the podcast. I want to go ahead and take a second to introduce none other than Margaret Blues herself. How are you doing? And welcome to Galaxy of Film.
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, of course. Do us a favor real quick. Everyone who follows you, it's no secret how big of a fan you are of both the Blues Brothers and obviously Ghostbusters, kind of goes hand in hand with that. Mm-hmm. But tell us a little bit about yourself. You do some stand-up comedy here and there, too. Tell us all about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I know Max because I'm like a massive Blues Brothers and especially John Belushi fan. So that's how I met him, through like different Facebook, Instagram groups and mutual friends and stuff like that. Also like the biggest Godfather Al Pacino fan. I've met Al Pacino twice actually, and he's nicest. He's the coolest. Yeah, I love Al Pacino so much. I love I'm a big mob movie fan. Like anything mob movie, like Goodfellas, Casino, also like The Sopranos and Boardwalk Empire, stuff like that.
Okay.
My dad's a Greek immigrant, so I think that's one reason why I like all like the Mediterranean family culture type stuff.
Makes sense, makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I also love the Fallout games. I don't know. The new TV show is coming out this week, which I'm excited about. I have a YouTube channel called Margaret Corleone Blues. I post a lot about movies. I do cosplay. I'm a Zool cosplayer for all you Ghostbusters fans. Can't see it now. My hair's really curly. So I'm a Zool cosplayer. Like Max said, I'm a stand-up comic, a fairly new stand-up comic. I was doing improv for a while. I actually did Second City's improv program. So that gave me like a better appreciation for Ghostbusters, because just seeing the way Second City makes your mind work with comedy, I kind of can see how like the wheels turn with Dan Aykroyd and how Ramis's head with their Second City training to make Ghostbusters, which is cool. So yeah, I've been doing stand-up comedy for 7 months, and I just did my second paid show, which is awesome.
Ooh, congratulations.
Thank you. And for the horror movie fans, I actually live right near where the Blair Witch lives. The Blair Witch is my neighbor.
I love it. I love it. That's fucking awesome.
Thank you.
That's dope. I'm glad to get you here on Galaxy of Film, of course, making your debut with
us. Thanks for having me.
It's my
podcast debut, period.
Oh, there we go.
I'm nervous.
You know how often I hear that? I love it. It's so cool to me that we get a deflower everyone for their podcast stuff in a way. I hear that often, almost as often as I hear about one of my short films where these actors I'll audition and I eventually cast, this is my first time acting, blah blah blah. I don't care how many times you've acted, I don't care how many podcasts you've been on, you can do it. And I love being able to get newcomers, some old faces, get some people who have been around the block both acting and podcasting. It's so cool to me, dude. I love getting the whole mixed bag with Galaxy of Film. So glad to get you on here. We got a fun episode in store, of course, discussing some Dan Aykroyd this week, actually, with Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, and Trading Places. Real quick, link down below for our former Ghostbusters episode that we did a couple years ago. We discussed all the other films, including the original Ghostbusters 2, Ghostbusters Afterlife, and of course, Ghostbusters 2016. And also, a little side note as well, too, our buddy Chris Sorrentino was going to make it here for this episode. Unfortunately, he's about as sick as The Last Jedi, feeling like absolute shit and could not make it. But he sends his love and wishes over here for Ghostbusters. And go check him out. Still linked down below for our buddy Chris. Great dude. Check out the real Ghostbusters project, too. Marg, you're actually wearing one of his shirts, which is cool. So he's here in spirit still. Good stuff. But yeah, real quick, Mark, before we dive into news, before we talk about the movie or anything like that, one thing I need to go ahead and put you on the spotlight for, a big, big reason why I wanted you on that last episode, why I mentioned you on that episode. You have such a unique opinion on a little movie that could, if you will. And I need my audience to finally hear this from the man himself. Please give us your brief thoughts on the 2016 Ghostbusters movie, because you have such a positive feeling about this thing.
I really enjoyed the movie. It's no secret I was there on opening night. I think that that Paul Feig did a really good job writing a movie that was, you know, original. And I thought that having the cast that he did, that they were great. I know we talked about it. You're not the biggest fan of Leslie Jones. I like her. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think keeping it straight with a lot of, you know, SNL casts that are good, as Margaret mentioned, with improv, I think that's what made Ghostbusters so great. And I thought that, you know, the style of comedy fit great with it. I love the story. I loved how it, you know, all the Easter eggs throughout for people that love the original films, the real Ghostbusters animated cartoon. There was so much of that stuff there for everybody. And, you know, I mean, I thought it was great. I loved how Kate McKinnon's character, Holtzman, I loved Holtzman, how she really dug into like a lot of the science and things. I love the characters, and I just really enjoy that movie a lot. And I think that any time, and this is one thing I loved about Extreme Ghostbusters, I think any time you humanize the ghosts, that it really, that it's a ballsy move to make.
Mm-hmm.
And the more less creature-like they are, you know, I think it's, it hits hard. And that's one thing, and I'm showing my hand a little early with Frozen Empire, that I loved about the character that interacted with Phoebe a lot. I think the more you humanize them, like the villain, Rowan, he was someone who was very relatable. He was someone that, you know, was bullied and picked on, and he had the gift of seeing, you know, ghosts. And I think the whole plot of, you know, him using the science that they had discovered and the ability as a way to, you know, unleash all this hell on Earth was a pretty cool plot twist at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I really loved the movie. I thought the music was great. I thought, you know, the actors did a great job. I loved Chris Hemsworth as Kevin in the movie. I liked all the cool equipment that they did. I thought it was really, really good. I have a lot of good feelings about the movie. I definitely appreciate the project.
I love to hear, man. I'm glad to finally, after 2 years, get you saying that on recording, too. Because I know our listeners were like, what the hell is Max talking about all this time ago? But, no, and also, I know I dogged The Last Jedi for a second earlier with Chris, but I want to dog The Last Jedi again. A little documentary with the director and the Jedi. Remember that? To quote Mark Hamill, I fundamentally disagree with everything you're saying. But I love it still regardless, man. I love hearing the hot takes. I love your very passionate opinion on that movie, even though I don't like the movie very much. So I'm glad to finally get you on here to kind of voice your opinion on that one. And, of course, discuss Frozen Empire, because you did bring up a great point of the humanization of characters, and I do agree with that. And that's something we'll get a little bit more into, obviously, when we discuss that movie. But, yeah, man. It feels good to finally do this one. It really does. But let's go ahead, guys. And before we start talking about these movies, let's go ahead and talk about the news. Our main thing this week is, of course, the new trailer for the new A24 movie, the finale in the X trilogy by Ty West. And that is, of course, Maxine. Now, Harold, we've covered X on the podcast. We've covered Pearl on the podcast, on the LFG show. And we'll cover Maxine this summer, of course, just to finish out the trilogy. Have you watched any of these movies? I don't remember if you were on for the X episode. I don't think so.
No, I don't know what that is.
Okay. it's just horror and porn, buddy.
Oh, nice.
What more do you want?
Yeah, basically. So, all right. Did you watch the trailer for Maxine at all, Harold? No?
No, I didn't even know that was a movie.
All right, you're good. All right. Margaret, have you seen X or Pearl, first off?
I haven't. I've seen clips, and, like, I know the plots of them, but I've never, like, sat down and watched them all the way through. But I knew enough to, like, understand the trailer.
Okay. But you haven't watched either of them all the way through?
No. I keep meaning to, and then I don't know. I'm, like, so behind on all my watch lists.
That's fair. I'm still making my way up, too. That's why we do the podcast. The podcast is secretly just my watch list mixed with what's new coming out. Like, Trading That's Places, fair. I've had this on DVD for 10 years, guys. But, no, I feel you on that. Okay, so did you watch the Maxine trailer then? Do you have any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I have like a basic, I have like enough of an idea of what the movies are about to okay. that I kind of got what was going on. I like the whole aesthetic of it. I think I feel like I've seen a lot of movies lately that have been trying to make them look older,
mm-hmm.
like this. But and this, I feel like really, it seems really 80s. And yeah, it's I saw like little nods to other horror movies like Psycho and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And like knowing what I know enough about it and about like Pearl the character, I'm like, is the killer in this one gonna somehow like tie? Like
I
the whole story.
Wondering
together.
About that. Yeah, as well, because like I said, you know, obviously Pearl's the prequel too. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering how much of a tie-in we're going to get from Pearl now that
yeah.
the character of Pearl is technically dead, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm not too sure. We'll just have to see how that kind of ties in together.
Yeah,
but
I'm also like really like fascinated with like the dark side of LA, if that makes sense. And
I agree.
I don't know, like the yeah, like the Chateau Marmont, like where that's like where John Belushi died and stuff like that. And like I'm interested in like Sharon Tate and like Jay Sebring and all those people. Like, so this definitely seems like something I definitely want to watch the other two so I can watch this one, because like that kind of like LA is just like a really fucked up place.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't know, I just, it feels like I kind of just like this really like almost like horror movie portrayal of Hollywood, and I don't know, something about it just calls me. I like it.
No, I 100% agree on that. I think that fits the aesthetic with this, what you were saying too. Like a lot of movies try hard to be a time piece, a period piece, and it kind of just feels like style over substance overall.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree, like also, having this like dark Hollywood side mixed in with this era is super interesting, because it's like the big drug scene in Hollywood going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, Belushi's yeah. death is around this time period too.
Oh, so yeah. Oh,
I doubt we'll see a reference to Belushi's death, maybe a shot of where he died, like you mentioned.
Yeah, Chateau Marmont was like, everybody partied there, and like the, like Jim Morrison used to live there before he died. Like that was like
yeah.
the party. I mean, it still is, like a lot of celebrities still go there and party, but like in mm-hmm. like the 60s to like 80s, that was like everybody was going there to do drugs and whatever the fuck else. So.
Yeah, so maybe we'll see some cool stuff like involving in that kind of scene. I do agree. I think mm-hmm. that whole era of Hollywood is really interesting. Just the underground mm-hmm. scene, I'm a sucker for. It was with big cities anyway. It's my favorite thing about Star Wars, is seeing like the underground stuff of Coruscant going forward.
Yeah,
love all of that.
Yeah,
100% agree with you. 100% Margaret. I'm not the biggest fan of X, looking back on it. You know, I praised it on the podcast whenever it first came out. We did that with Cabin in the Woods, I believe. I think X is an okay watch, but like I still don't care for it looking back on it as much. I really do like Pearl, though. Pearl sat with me much better than X did. I was kind of sad I gave it the LFG treatment instead of doing a full-blown episode for it. But Maxine, like, I really do like this trailer. Like, the dark Hollywood stuff's mm-hmm. cool. I love the opening bit with the A24 logo as the Hollywood sign. That's the coolest thing in the world. That's, like, when I have a trailer for a feature length in 10 years, you can expect the Galaxy Film VHS on that hill. Like, that's so dope. I'm definitely doing that one day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going into this with positive thoughts. I'm hoping it's fun. I know Giancarlo Esposito has joined the cast for this too, so we'll see. But Mark, have you seen X?
Oh, that's
or Pearl?
Nice. I didn't watch X, but I did see Pearl, and
okay.
I loved Pearl. I thought Pearl was fantastic.
Sweet. Did you watch Pearl in theaters, or did you catch it on like VOD and rental? Okay, sweet, sweet.
Yes, I saw it in theaters.
Okay. Did you have a chance to watch the Maxine trailer then?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm gonna do that this evening though.
Okay, well, do me a favor then, real quick. Obviously, you don't have all the context from not watching X, but for based mm-hmm. off of Pearl and what you know about Maxine, what are your thoughts on this? Because obviously, this is the finale film. We had X being the start. Pearl's the prequel, which deals with the older woman in X, mm-hmm. and then the mm-hmm. young girl is who Maxine is in this next film.
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited. Mm-hmm. I'm really, really excited to see this because I've tried to watch X, but I had a little bit of a hard time getting into it. And I'm a big horror fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought Pearl was definitely a big step in the right direction and mm-hmm. a big step up. So I'm really excited to see what they do with this one. Cause I'd heard months ago that this was coming
mm-hmm.
and I, when you guys were talking about it, I was like, oh, I got to watch this trailer now. So yeah, I'm super excited to see it.
You mentioned months, man. The crazy thing is, we were all really, really rooting on this to be a full trilogy in 2022. You know, because you got those two films out back to back, man. It was like July and October. Everyone's like, are we getting Maxine by December? No, a year and a half later, real sick one, Ty West.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what happened here, man. I have high expectations for Maxine after that. You know, if it was dog shit.
Hopefully it'll be worth the wait.
Yeah, if it was dog shit, it could have passed, you know, 2 years ago. But we'll see. But guys, that wraps up for news this week. We're going to go ahead and take a quick little break. And when we go over our stream of the week brought to you by Brandon this week, afterwards, though, we're going to go ahead and start discussing Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. We'll be right back.
Oh, hi, Mark.
The Galaxy of Film rating system is based off planets featured within the Star Wars films. From our highest rating to lowest, here is the order in which we rate these films. Number 5.
Coruscant. The entire planet is one big city.
Number 4.
Bespin is pretty far, but I think we can make it.
Mining colony?
Yeah, Tabana gas mine.
Number 3.
Like you did by the lake on Naboo.
Number 2.
Set your course for the Hoth system.
And lastly, number 1.
Gotta get back to Jakku.
Back to Jakku! Why does everyone want to go back to Jakku?
What's going on, listeners? This is Brandon Messina, editor for Galaxy of Film, here to give you this episode's Stream of the Week. For this episode, I watched Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV, which is available to watch on Max and Discovery+. This four-episode docuseries delves into some of the ins and outs of what was going on behind the scenes of children's TV studios, more specifically Nickelodeon studios, and focuses most of the attention on the tenure of former showrunner Dan Schneider between the mid-90s and late 2010s. Like a good amount of people, I have heard rumors and whispers about what was happening behind the cameras, but never to an extent like what was being talked about in the documentary. Growing up, these kids' shows were some of my favorites to watch, and to see and listen to some of the alleged instances that occurred there made me feel disgusted and shocked. One big example of this was the fact that two pedophiles were working at the studio at the same time, and one of them became pen pals with the notorious serial killer John Wayne Gacy. After watching, it definitely gave me a new perspective of how cruel the child acting industry can be, and I couldn't even imagine what some of those kids at that age were going through as well. And my heart goes out to those that were affected by it. This has been your Stream of the Week, and let us continue on with the podcast.
An all-new analog horror series begins here. Galaxy of Film and Mayhem Pictures presents The Artist, 1996. Now available on the Galaxy of Film YouTube channel.
Alright guys, and we're back from our break. First up on the chopping block this week is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Normally this is a part of the podcast where I ask when was the first time you guys all watched this, but obviously everyone's seen this in theaters. So I want to go ahead and ask instead, how many times have you guys watched this in theaters? Harold, I know you're always at the Regal, you're always checking out stuff, tagging us to the fan club. Follow the Galaxy Film fan club already if you're not in it. That way Harold can, you know, update you guys on what's in theaters. But Harold, how many times have you seen this thing?
I've seen it three times.
Twice.
From the beginning, and one time it was kind of late. My friend was like, if I wanted to see it, welcome. I was like, he said what time the movie was, and I was like, if I make it, it's probably going to be like 20 minutes into the movie, but I've seen it twice already, so I don't mind seeing it a third time.
There you go, my man. Okay.
Nice.
And Mark, I know you also, dude, and for context, we talked a little bit about this in that Phantom Menace episode, guys. Go check it out way back when. You hold, in my opinion, the personal record, I know, for someone who's seen the most amount of times in one theatrical run. Mm-hmm. And you saw The Rise of Skywalker 11 times, which is crazy.
Yes.
How many times have you seen Frozen Empire?
I've only got to see it once. This was, I didn't get to go to the theater. I think The Nun 2 was the last time I got to go to the theater. So I had a long stretch where I didn't get to go. And so I was so excited. I was like, I've got to see this. So my girlfriend and I went and saw it. It was our first movie together to watch. And I was so excited to be back in the theater for Ghostbusters. So I always jump at any chance to see something Ghostbusters on the big screen.
Very nice. It's been like 6-7 months for you then, man. It was like September, October since The Nun. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Goodness. Well, yeah. I'm glad it got you back into theater at least, man. Got to get those numbers back up so you can beat Rise of Skywalker.
Yes. Yes.
Love it. Love it. And Margaret, what about you? How many times have you had a chance to watch Frozen Empire?
I've only gotten to see it once as well. I saw it the Friday it came out, and then I got sick right afterwards, and I've been like, I was fighting that for a while, and I've had like a lot of comedy stuff going, so I've been able to make it out to the theater and babysit my nephews like all the time. So
I feel you.
I want to see it again, but I just haven't gotten the chance to. So sadly, only once.
I feel you on that. For me, it's also been one. Definitely got to get back up there and see it. I think a second time for sure, though. I don't know. This was fun to watch, man. Like Mark, I know you and I kind of talked about a little bit about this way back when. But like my excitement for Afterlife was there, sure. But like it definitely got like dampened down from the delays of COVID, you know, everything going off that. But this one, man, this one was just like a nonstop excitement rush like for it. Like I was hyped for it, you know. And the crazy thing is that I think we all can acknowledge real quick if we need to get out of our system and rant if we need to. We live in a world where it took, you know, 20 plus years for a third Ghostbusters. But we got a fourth one with ease? That blows my fucking mind, dude. And Bill Murray's in both of them?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy to me, man. I'm at a loss for words for it. I'm happy for it. You know, makes you want to say what if, what could have been for sure. If we had gotten a third one sooner, but damn, man, these are fun. And I'll go ahead and say right now, before we even get to the recap of Frozen Empire in a second, that Frozen Empire and Afterlife together are a great Ghostbusters tale that make up for not having a third. I feel like these two, this is one complete story in my opinion. Well, definitely, I feel like both movies can stand on their own and be their own individual adventure with Ghostbusters, whatever you want to call it. This little arc, this Spangler arc, is very, very, you know, fulfilling, I should say.
Yeah.
So, very surprised by that, and I will praise both of these movies for that. But Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, we're kicking up. It's a couple years later after the events of the last film. Obviously, our heroes return to kind of put on the proton packs one more time, defeat Zool again. You know, we got Paul Rudd doing his thing in his little Toyota Corolla. He's a Ghostbusters now. He's banging the local hot single mom, who's also a Ghostbuster. And plot twist, she's the daughter of a Ghostbuster, so now her kids are also Ghostbusters. One of her kids, a Stranger Things kid. It's a whole Ghostbusters, like, multiverse thing here, dude. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So, years later, we got the Ghostbuster family. We got Paul Rudd, who's just banging the hot mom in the Ghostbusters firehouse now. I don't know how they're living in this thing, because we saw Winston buy it back in the post-credits for the last movie. He just said, hey, guys, come live in here rent-free, I guess. So that's just the thing. They're chilling, doing some Ghostbusting. And all of a sudden, Dickless from the first movie comes around. And he does his thing again, man. He does his little thing. And he's like, Ghostbusters, you're going to stop busting. And he pulls this out of his pocket. Child protection laws. Child labor laws. And Phoebe Spangler is no longer a Ghostbuster just like that. Which is crazy, because I really wish some motherfucker in a suit would have came into the pizza shop I was working at 16 and 17 with all that equipment, because that is wild.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So Phoebe's a little sad. She can't do any Ghostbusting around town. We get a little subplot of that. And in the meantime, we kind of get to see what our legacy heroes are up to. You know, Ray's still around. He has his little bookstore. But he's got podcasts from the last film as an intern, and they're doing an online ghost show, which is really, really funny because Dan Aykroyd, as much as I love you, as much as you are one of my favorite actors of all time, and I respect you and your music and all that jazz, bro, dude, you are a fucking nut when it comes to ghosts and the supernatural stuff. So
yeah.
That was hilarious. I cried in the theater and no one else understood it. So that was a joke for me. Thank you, Reitman, for that one.
Yes.
But he's chilling, kind of like the supernatural pawn shop around the block. We got Venkman, who's more or less doing the same scientific bullshit again, where it's not really ghost-busting. He's just, you know, seeing if you're a psychic or not. We got Winston, who's like a businessman, super successful, super rich.
I love that.
Love it, dude. Yeah, because he got fucking skimped on that first movie for a paycheck. Yep. Now Winston is a rich ass motherfucker. I love it, dude. Now the turntables have turned.
He's hitting sex appeal.
Yeah, he's got that like Billy Dee Williams swagger with him in this one, man. It's crazy. And so he's just a business dude. He's just throwing money like Bruce Wayne at the Ghostbusters, which is really crazy. This movie borrows a lot from the cartoons with some of the over-the-top stuff from the gadgets. We got Finn Wolfhard's love interest from the last movie, chilling as an intern. We got some new dude who's kind of like Q from James Bond, but he's also like, he's like Q mix of Egon. He's just the place filler for Egon and gadgets. We know that, but he's still kind of cool.
Yeah.
Couldn't tell you his name, though. But he's there. What else we got going on? We got the return of a little green bean, man. You know, our favorite bustable, you know, little fat guy. Slimer's back. We get a weird little subplot of Finn Wolfhard's character just, like, going after Slimer throughout the whole movie. It's pretty awesome. I think we've all waited for Slimer to have a prominent role in the movie for Ghostbusters, and this is that, finally. So that kind of paid off. But, yeah. So, basically, we got Kamal, who's just in this movie, just like he was just in Obi-Wan, for some reason. As fun as he randomly is. Yeah, it's so odd. He's just the fake Jedi. He's the fake ghost in this one, too. It's really weird. Like, I wish he would stop being typecast as the random kind of, like, stupid misfit. It's just funky. That makes me not like him. That or the Eternals, which is also just awful.
I like him personally, but I never thought a superhero side plot in a Ghostbuster movie was ever going to be a thing.
He's not the right fit for it, I feel like. Mm-hmm. He feels too generic, unfortunately, in this. Like, give him a fighting chance if you're going to put him in a movie, like a franchise movie like this, you know? Make him interesting. Either erase the character from this, or if you need a Fire Master, you know, make it some random cameo character just so it's fun at that point. Who cares? Mm-hmm. But anyways, so back to the point. He's just kind of like a hype beast reseller. He sells a family heirloom to Mr. Ray, and all hell breaks loose. And we got this Mr. Frozen dude who says, "Hey, in New York, I'm freezing your shit, bro." And he does exactly that. And the Ghostbusters have to come save the day, just like that one song said. And they all come together. They bust some ghosts, and they save the day. Quite literally, it's the Ghostbusters. What else do you expect? But this time, we got Annie Potts in a suit and a proton pack, so that was cool. Glad we got to see her do some busting.
Oh my gosh.
And we have one other little plot real quick, too, going on this that I forgot to mention. Phoebe, you know, we kind of see in the last movie, she's, you know, talking to Egon. She can speak to this ghost, which is the cool thing to keep his character alive in that film. She does that in this, too, but it's not with Egon. It's with this other little random fire blue ghost girl thing. And she's just kind of there. They're friends. They like hint at a love plot, I feel like, but like they don't really have the balls to do it, it feels. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of have like a plot twist where she turns on her and she's with the frozen dude and not. It's weird. Like, it's cool, it works, I get it. I've seen the storyline 100 times before. It feels very Doctor Who-y, in my opinion. But it's just the thing that's there ultimately. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, and I gotta be real with you guys, walking out of the theater for this thing, I was in love with this, bro. I really had a lot of fun with Frozen Empire. Sure, this movie's not perfect. I heard a couple groans in the theater even, I guess. Like my buddy Caleb, he checked his phone during this one time. I don't care, man. This is a movie, if you're a fan of this franchise, you're going to love it. You know, the same people who did not like Afterlife are going to be the same people who do not like Frozen Empire. It just is that way. And I do think the Ghostbusters, like, I think Ghostbusters as a whole is very, like, it's a very easily like palatable franchise, a serious movie to watch. However, I take a look at it and I realize every single Ghostbusters movie except the original has some form of hate around it. You know, even Afterlife, as much as it's praised upon like a common viewership, some fans have issues with it. There is always going to be some fans that are bitter because there's no Harold Ramis because Murray took so long, you know. But yeah, I think in a series where clearly nothing but the first movie's perfect and we're still having fun with it, it still has that livelihood and that joy and that charisma and character and soul, this works. Mark, what was your initial reaction walking out of the theater for this thing?
I had a lot of thoughts, and I'll try to like speed through them. I was one that had a bit of a bitter taste with Afterlife because I felt like, you know, a lot of people didn't like the 2016 movie. They didn't want it passed on to a new team. And I felt like I really loved the new characters that were introduced and Egon's family. But I had some issues with the ending of it. I mean, I loved, you know, the whole part of Egon's ghost showing back up and helping Phoebe to bust Gozer. But I felt like at the end, it was like the gatekeepers of the fandom won, that, you know, it went back to the original team. And it was like, you introduce us to this new family. And it's like Winston was taking everything back to New York and away from them. And I had issues with that, with the ending. And so, you know, when I saw this and that they put the team back and they were all in the firehouse, like within minutes, I was like, okay, I like Afterlife a lot better now. So okay. I could tell that right off the bat. So that made some peace with me with Afterlife. So it was good to have that feeling back, you know, that I wanted so much to like the movie. But I loved it because Ray is my favorite Ghostbuster and always has been. And getting to see Dan Aykroyd have such a good time in this movie brought me joy.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could tell he was really getting to do a lot of things he wanted to do with Ghostbusters. And I love the plot. I mean, there were some things for me that didn't work, but they were throwing so much at the wall with this movie. There were so many side plots and, you know, different things, and some of it worked for me. I mean, some of it didn't work for me, but most of it did. I loved it. I thought this was great, and they had a lot. I loved the idea of Winston creating the new headquarters, like for more research, and you get to see like a deep dive into like the scientific part of paranormal study, all the equipment and everything, and just diving deep into the lore. So I thought the final boss was great. And I love where it was like taking the proton beams and just like freezing them. And
oh, that was cool. You know,
yeah, that was awesome.
I like that a little bit more really than awesome. Like just I don't know if this was done in Afterlife. It might have actually. I was expecting just like a traditional like Luke Skywalker Last Jedi, like he grabs the lightsaber kind of thing, you know. But I'm glad we got some Frozen stuff. I like seeing some different things done with the proton packs and just Ghostbusters things in general. It's neat to see this world that we... I feel like Ghostbusters, while it is a franchise, yes, when you say franchise, you're automatically these days comparing it to the MCU, to Star Wars, to DC, to something that's huge and massive. And while Ghostbusters certainly does have a franchise at this point, it's not that deep, though. Like,
right,
it's still surface level. We're still building lore, technically, with these movies. And that's the crazy part to me. So I love seeing them kind of push that a bit more. That was something we kind of saw also in Afterlife, with Egon's ghost being able to kind of be a character other than, than it's just Slimer being the only ghostly character. You mentioned earlier the humanization of ghosts, and we got to see like the foundation of that in the last movie, which was really cool. And then also the Ecto-1 being more of a character in the last movie I really liked as well. But I think all that blends incredibly well when you look at both of these side by side. 100% agree with you, Mark. Margaret, when you're walking out of the theater for the first time watching Frozen Empire, what were your first thoughts on this one?
Yeah, it was really fun. I'm so sorry.
You're good. You're good. Relax.
I'm nervous.
Yeah, this is fun.
Okay. So like I'm a 90s baby, so I'm always afraid to like piss off like the hardcore like Ghostbusters fans.
Piss them off, girl. Piss them off.
Yes. Your opinion is just as valid as theirs.
If you want some confidence, Margaret, we just began this episode praising 2016 Ghostbusters, okay? Everyone's already pissed. True. So go ahead, give us the hot takes.
I mean, I loved it. It was a lot of fun. I loved the opening scene. Like, that was one of the coolest things to me, where you showed, like, the firefighters in the firehouse, and they were, like, it was just kind of a cool full circle moment. And I like the production design of that whole scene. That was really cool. I really like Graca. I felt like, I don't know, maybe because I saw Ghostbusters not when I was a kid, but I was older. Like, I never really felt intimidated by a ghost or anything. But, like, Rock was kind of scary as shit sometimes. Like, he had, like, like those long nails, and he was, like, touching Phoebe's face. Like, that was creepy. Was probably, like, the first time I've ever been truly, like, creeped out by, like, a Ghostbusters thing.
He reminded me a bit of, like, the Dementors from Harry Potter, almost.
Yes!
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that was creepy. I really liked Lars, was that his name? He was funny. He added some really good dry humor to the franchise. And also, I'm a hardcore Slimer fan, so like I did not scream anytime Slimer came onto the screen. I love Slimer so much. I think my favorite part of the entire movie was when the possessor was in the pizza, and then Slimer just showed up and ate the pizza. I was like, yes, Slimer's in it.
I loved seeing all the different kinds of ghosts, like the possessor. Yes, that was great.
And then also what Mark was saying about Dan, I'm a huge Dan fan. Wraith, my favorite Ghostbuster as well. And yeah, you could just see how happy Dan was. The part that, one of my other favorite things, was the motorcycle, the Ecto motorcycle.
Oh, yes.
Because I know how much Dan loves motorcycles, and like I just fangirled for Dan. I was like, this is probably like the greatest day of Dan Aykroyd's life, having the Ghostbusters motorcycle.
His best golden years, like he said in the movie.
Yeah.
And I got emotional seeing like everyone suit up. I got a little misty eyed when Janine suited up. That was just so freaking cool. I'm trying to think of what other things I like. Finn Wolfhard, I feel like I just always see him as Mike from Stranger Things. I feel like he's just permanently Mike in my brain, but
we'll get to little Finny Wolfhard in a little bit. We're gonna talk about that little bastard.
I'm the same way with Dan Aykroyd. He's always Ray to me. So yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Really?
But yeah, I love.
Okay. See, Dan Aykroyd, it's interesting. For me, he's always, like, whatever the last character I watched him as. Like, that always just transfers over. So, like, when I was watching Trading Places for this episode, it was so uncomfortable, dude. I'm like, why is Ray's stance, like, looking at Jamie Lee Curtis's tits, man?
I mean, don't we all look at Jamie Lee Curtis's tits?
Oh, absolutely. But anyway, keep going on, Margaret. Keep going on.
I'm trying to think of what else. I feel like I got sick like the night I saw it. So I think my book kind of shut some of it out. But yeah, I love Paul Rudd. He's such a great addition to the franchise. I feel like he was good because I feel like a lot of the, like, you know, Dan and Bill and all them, they're kind of have this geeky likableness to them. Like, I guess like the word is adorkable. I think that's kind of a cheesy word these days. But I remember that word back when I was like a kid on Tumblr, and like everybody would be like, Sherlock Holmes is adorable, blah blah blah. yeah, and he also has like the SNL connections, like he's in the Five Timers Club, so I feel like he's like a good person for the franchise. And then the whole thing with Phoebe and the ghost, that was interesting. I felt like the whole becoming friends and betraying was, it's kind of a big trope in a lot of movies, so wasn't like the most interesting thing to me, but the whole was it or was it not a romance is definitely something that I've been seeing hotly debated. I don't know if we're going to talk about that later, but
go for it now. I think it should be. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah, it's hard. I don't know. It seemed like sometimes it seemed like they were going for that, but then it seemed like not. But just the whole scene where the proton extractor, that, I can't remember what it's called. I'm so sorry.
No, I know what you're talking about. It's like the spirit thing where they remove her. Yeah, it's just like also that. A Doctor Who thing, it looks like, as well, funny enough. It's like how David Tennant regenerates.
That scene, like the lighting and everything, it was just like very romantic.
Yeah, like, I thought they were going to kiss, bro.
I did too.
I know. I mean, I'd extract myself to turn into the spirit to kiss John Belushi's ghost, so like...
Who's turning into a ghost and isn't kissing, bro? Like, that's what I want to know. you got 2 minutes, bro. You have to.
I know.
It's like, who wouldn't bang an alien?
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh, I'd bang Felder Conehead. That's another damn scary one.
Only the best here, Galaxy of Film.
Oh my gosh. Also, my soul is an alien, so... But but the director and I think McKenna both described it as a crush, and they said it was based on another movie from like the 1920s where somebody fell in love with a ghost. But then the girl who plays Melody, whose name I'm forgetting at the moment, she described it more of a friendship, so it seems like, I mean, I guess it's kind of like they don't want to piss people off.
That's exactly what it sounds like.
I think if you want to see it, it's there.
Yeah.
What a cop out. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Just go the extra mile. You're already making me a little weird watching teenagers having a kiss. Like, you might as well just go the whole nine yards. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, okay? But, Harold, what are your thoughts when you were walking out of the theater watching this thing? What are your thoughts on the relationship with Phoebe and the ghost? What are your thoughts on this one, bro?
Well, I really enjoy Ghostbusters in general as a franchise. I will be the next person to say that Dan Aykroyd, you know, Ray is my favorite Ghostbuster as well. So I think we're all on the same page as that. He's always been my favorite Ghostbuster. And he was actually my favorite character in the movie. I mean, no surprise, you know, every Ghostbuster he's been in, he's been my favorite character. So it was really good that, you know, like Mark and Margaret said, he was really having the time of his life doing this. You can tell in the acting that he really enjoyed playing this role, you know, and he believes in this stuff and outside of the movie. So, you know, it actually doesn't feel like acting because it feels like he's just being himself. And again, I know he also likes motorcycles. So, you know, it does feel like it's just natural, him acting natural rather than acting. You know, the whole scene at the, my favorite scene in the movie is him going past the librarian and she shushes them. And then he's just like, holy crap, it's the librarian again. Like, that never gets old, and it still scares him. Even now, he's just not going to get over that. So it's you know, Dan Aykroyd's a really great actor in Ghostbusters, and I really like him as a character. Upon the new cast, my favorite character is Gary, the father, right?
Yeah, but Paul Rudd, yeah.
He's really cool and funny. I actually like his whole thing of not wanting to say that he's Phoebe's dad. You know, that was really good. At the end when she calls him dad, I was like, she called me dad. It was just like that, you know, I really was cheering for that part because I was like, the movie's almost over, but I know it's going to happen, and I'm glad it happened when it happened.
Right.
It was such a great, wholesome part. But, yeah, I really did enjoy watching the movie. I knew I was going to see it the next day with a friend, so, you know, I was really happy to say that I'm going to see this movie again tomorrow. You know, it was so good. It is so good. And
yeah.
If my friends who did not see it want to see it or want to see it again, I would jump to seeing it in a heartbeat like that.
I love to hear it, dude. I love the Dan Aykroyd positivity, bro, because Dan Aykroyd's my favorite actors of all time.
That you guys are the first ones that I've ever met that Ray is also your favorite. I know it's usually Pete.
Yeah, it's so usually Venkman, I feel like, too.
I can see why. I love getting to hear that, so that's cool.
Yeah, I love Dan Aykroyd, bro.
Venkman is my favorite, though.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool.
It's John Belushi as Venkman, so, but if John Belushi is Venkman, he'd be my favorite, but yeah, Ray's my favorite. I have a Ghostbusters jacket that I got from Spirit Halloween that I wear, like, all the time, and it comes with, like, the Velcro names on them, and you can remove it, and I was wearing the right, like, the right name tag to a comedy show a few weeks ago, another comedian was like, I've never seen anybody wear Ray Stantz merchandise. That's a deep cut.
Yes.
Everybody should be wearing Ray merchandise.
He's the heart of the Ghostbusters, truly.
Yes.
He really is. I think it's I think it's no secret we all kind of love this movie, it sounds like. So I am going to go ahead and ask for your guys' final thoughts and ratings on Ghostbusters Frozen Empire at this point. Because, you know, we could talk here all night just gushing for 10 hours about Ghostbusters, clearly.
Sure.
But, Harold, you see this thing the most times, dude, so I'm putting you up first. What would you rate Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, and what final comments do you have about this movie?
I don't know the name of it.
Just give me a rating, Harold. You can have your own rating system at this point.
Bye.
Five?
I don't know which planet is that. Croissant or Bespin? One of those?
Only the best year galaxy of film. I love it. What are your final comments for, buddy?
It was really good. You know, I like the end credit scene with the mini Stay Puffs. You know, I highly doubt that's setting up for our next movie, but I hope we get another movie.
Just
a really good movie.
Why not, dude? I mean, fuck it. The fourth one was so easy to make.
I can't wait till I get a chance to buy the Blu-ray. If they got a steel case, I'd go for the steel case. I have to pop it from it somewhere.
They've got it on pre-order on Amazon right now.
Yeah. I have the special popcorn bucket in here somewhere, but
The ghost trap?
Yeah.
I got the ghost trap right behind me too. Yeah. That's dope.
I see it.
That thing's dope. But Mark, I'm putting you up on the chopping block next, man. What is your rating of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire? What are your final thoughts on it?
I'm going to say Naboo on the way to, I think it was Bespin was number four.
Yeah.
So I'd give it a solid 3.5 out of 5. Like I said, there were a couple problems I had with it, like the whole Firemaster thing I just wasn't a big fan of, and I would have loved seeing more of the final ghost tearing things up, because I thought they really had a good idea for one. And I love, like I was saying, like what they were doing with the proton stream. It's you know, from a horror standpoint, it's like saying, yeah, I've got your silver bullet here it is back. You know, so I loved how they were able to, you know, get everybody together, get them all suited up, and definitely have some potential for another sequel. But I do have to say one thing I loved was, you know, in Ghostbusters 2, the Ghostbusters song was like actually in universe. And I loved how Paul Rudd kept going to Egon's daughter. So it's like, you know, if there's something strange in your neighborhood, like, who are these people going to call? You know, so I love that they kept it in universe. They kept that going.
It's very, it reminds me of Detective Pikachu, Ryan Reynolds doing the Pokemon theme. Good stuff.
Yes.
Good stuff, man. I love it. I love it. For my personal rating of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, I love these movies to death. I love them so much. Ghostbusters will always have a place in my heart. Frozen Empire was a lot of fun, man. Not only was this, you know, a new Ghostbusters movie to see, and not only was Ghostbusters always been a significant thing in my life, but this was the first box office, like, hit I got to, like, work at my theater I work at. Now that I manage a movie theater. So this was pretty cool. Like, I came out, we did a whole Ghostbusters display. Like, we made the firehouse sign to put in the lobby. We had a print of Chris's real Ghostbusters artwork on display there. We had some kids draw some artwork we put on there, too. It was a lot of fun, man.
That's like, great.
I was thrilled to work at a theater opening Ghostbusters. Yeah, this is a lot of fun. My gripes mainly include the Firemaster stuff and a little bit of Finn Wolfhard. Just like, they just got there in this movie. You know, Finn Wolfhard had at least a little bit of a plot in the last one where I semi-cared about him. In this one, he's just here hanging out with Slimer. And that's fine. But if this is the last time we see him as a character, I think it'll be disappointing in terms of a series. Like, this is a decent, we'll forget about him for one movie and come back kind of thing. But yeah, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, this is a Bespin for me. I loved it still. But Margaret, what about you? What are your final comments and ratings for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire?
I'm terrible at thinking of ratings, but I would feel maybe like probably close to Bespin
okay.
for my rating. I would say my biggest gripe with it, I think Mark mentioned it a little bit, was that I just wish we got more Garaka. I felt like there was just a lot of build up to like how terrifying this like ancient god was, and I feel like we just didn't see enough of it, and I thought he was such a cool villain, and I feel like there was a lot of room to put more. Like, the movie, it was a pretty short movie. Like, once it came down to the final battle, I was like, wait, aren't we going to have more Garaka? Like, yeah, I was a little... Mm-hmm. I just really enjoyed him as a villain. I wish we had more Garaka, but overall, I really like the movie. I'm excited to see... I don't know what's going to happen next, but I'm excited to see it. Maybe more Rick Moranis. I would love to maybe, like, one. A little Lewis cameo. That would be amazing.
About time. Him and Sigourney Weaver are the only two that didn't make cameos in this one.
Yeah.
You know.
But, but yeah, Garaka was, like, scary, and I liked how they showed how he throws the proton pack and all that stuff like everybody else, but there was, like, a little bit more of him. And I feel like the movie just could have been a little bit longer. I'm, like, big on pacing. Like, pacing is, like, something that really, like, bugs me in movies. Like, The Godfather is, like, what I describe as perfect pacing.
Mm.
But, so the pacing of this movie was a little, that was my biggest gripe with this movie, because I'm a stickler for pacing when it comes to movies. And that was my thing. But, oh my god, having Slimer back, my heart was so full seeing Slimer, and, I don't know. It's another funny thing is my dad reminds me so much of Egon.
Mm-hmm.
He actually went to the same college as Harold Ramis.
That's cool.
And my dad, and he went to Washington U, and he was actually in a fraternity. And if you've seen Animal House when they're doing the pledging and they're spanking Kevin Bacon with the paddle, my dad actually has that exact paddle from his fraternity.
Oh.
So I think.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
like the prop?
I mean, not the one they used on Kevin Bacon, but it was...
But so your dad has something to touch Kevin Bacon's ass?
No. Oh my gosh. That would be cool, though. But yeah. And then it's funny, because I realized while watching this, is that Finn Wolfhard reminds me of my dad. It looks like my dad when he was a teenager a little bit, too. Aww. I'm like, oh my god. All nice. The Spangler. I'm Spangler, I guess. But,
there you go.
So...
Love it.
But... Yeah, but so that was cool. I feel like something else I wanted to say, but I don't know. I love seeing Dan Aykroyd happy, and I love seeing Winston. Winston, let's give an applause for Winston.
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
He's so underrated, and I just feel like seeing him finally kind of get his flowers and kind of being probably the main of the originals after Ray, because Peter wasn't in it much. That was just. Really cool, and seeing him and Ray come together at the end. That
it's
my heart
meta,
happy.
Too, which is nice. You know, like, every Ghostbuster, you know, represents how they felt about the franchise in a way. Like, Dan Aykroyd's the heart, for sure. Bill Murray's the fuck off. And then Winston, like you said, gets his flowers, finally, you know. He gets the love he should have gotten in the first film. So.
I love that.
Full circle.
Yeah.
Full circle.
But, it's full circle. Yeah, just a little more Garaka. He's scary. I want to see some more. But know. Yeah, I'm excited to see like all these new ghosts, more ghost contraptions, and I don't know.
One thing I would love to see, like, and hopefully in the next sequel, was I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago, IDW Comics made a Ghostbuster series called Crossing Over, where they had there was a ghost that like completely ripped the like this big giant tear in, you know, the dimensional plane, I guess, and they had the Answer the Call team, the real Ghostbusters, and the Ghostbusters all together, you know, for like, you know, kind of together, sort of like they did with the Ninja Turtles, where they had, you know, all of them together, like from the comics, the cartoons, and that story was phenomenal. And I think that it would translate to film very, very well.
I agree.
That would be cool.
It'd be cool. Who knows? Who knows what the franchise holds for the future, guys? But I do know.
I think it's good.
I do know what the future of this podcast holds, and that is, up next, we're discussing Trading Places, starring Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy. Now, Mark, I know you are about to head out because you haven't had a chance to watch this next film, unfortunately, but regardless, it's been an absolute pleasure getting you back on the podcast. It's been far too long, my friend. We'd love to get you back on here again. Where can our listeners find you?
Right now, I'm kind of getting myself back onto trying to work out getting myself back on the social media and stuff. So I don't really have anything to plug right now, but hopefully in the future you'll find me here.
And exactly. You know what? Check out episode 19 of Galaxy of Film, guys. That's where you can find more Mark. Get some more love from him from Phantom Menace. Absolutely. There you go.
All right, you guys, take care. Thank you so much for having me on.
Nice to meet you.
Of course. And we'll be right back, guys, after this next break.
Yo, this is Ty from NoVex. Make sure you go check out NoVex. It's available now. You can check it out on YouTube channel, Galaxy of Film. Appreciate the support. Holla.
All right, guys, we're back from our second break. Coming at you now is Trading Places, starring Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy. This movie came out, I believe, in 84, if I'm not mistaken. And this is a first-time watch for me, actually. This is something I've had physically for God knows how many years, and I've just never watched it for some reason. Margaret, when was the first time you had a chance to watch Trading Places?
I think it was, like, a little over 2 years ago I watched it. I was just bored one night, and I kept hearing, I know so many Dan fans. Because, you know, I'm, usually the Belushi girl in the crowds, but so, like, most of my, like, Blues Brothers friends are, like, the Dan hardcore fans. So I kept hearing, what's Trading Places? So I just put it on one night. So it was probably, like, a little over 2 years ago. I watched it after, like, in the Blues Brothers for a few years, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Harold, what about you? When was the first time you can remember watching Trading Places as well?
It's bit of a story. So, of course, I like Dan Aykroyd from Ghostbusters. So I was watching this sitcom. It's called According to Jim, and
yes.
he guest starred on that. I knew who Jim Belushi was, and Dan Aykroyd was on. I was like, I know that guy from somewhere. He's from somewhere. And I was like, oh, these are the two Blues Brothers. Well, not that Jim Belushi, but I was like, oh, and he's the guy from Ghostbusters 2. He's a really cool guy. So I started watching a lot of his movies, and Trading Places was one of them.
Okay.
And I think this was 2011.
Oh, because this has been a minute for you. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
2011, I'm pretty sure.
Coming at you with the deep cut, Harold. I love it, bro. That's how we get you on here.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, Trading Places. This movie is pretty cool. You know, there's another SNL movie that's kind of similar to this, and that would be Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties. A little bit of a hot take for everybody, which is really funky that Bill Murray decided to do that movie. But yeah, Anyways, we got Dan Aykroyd. He's a big-time successful rich man in New York. We got Eddie Murphy, who's kind of like this homeless crackhead, just kind of chilling out, causing problems. He's got no legs. He's got legs. He's trying to fuck. You know, he's just hanging out. And there's this bet that takes place between some co-workers of Dan, who are just kind of like upper rich white scumballs, you know, working Bull Street and stock market, all that kind of jazz. And they bet a dollar that they can, you know, ruin this man's life and kind of make this other life, guy's life better, switching roles. And that's exactly what happens. And they kind of convince everybody to go along with this and switch their livelihoods together. So Dan Aykroyd is framed for selling drugs, for selling angel dust. He's living with a prostitute who's played by Jamie Lee Curtis. And Eddie Murphy's getting the luxury treatment, being able to stay in Dan Aykroyd's penthouse kind of deal. He gets the job. He's got the money. He's being trusted by people for once kind of thing. And they're really settling into this lifestyle. During this, while they're both kind of like heads upside down, what's going on? Why are our lives like this? Eddie Murphy then hears, overhears in the bathroom while smoking weed, the whole bet going on. During this, is when he's kind of realized, oh shit, this is what happened. He tracks down Dan at Jamie Lee's house. He's like, yo, what's up, dog? This is the situation. We gotta go ahead and make it better. Jamie Lee's like, yo, dog, I'm in this too. Just make sure I get my money. You owe me. We're homies. All that jazz. And they basically convince or make up this massive scheme to kind of get revenge and to get their places back. And both end up in luxury this time again. And end up, more importantly, happy. Which is kind of a cool, like, message in this. So yeah, and that plan ultimately ends up working. We get some cool stuff for there on the train. We get Jamie Lee Curtis as a Swiss woman, which is really funny because I just was over, or no, Swedish, excuse me. Never mind, it's not that funny. I was not in Sweden, I was in Switzerland. But we get Dan Aykroyd doing blackface for a scene, which is really weird. And then we also get Jim Belushi in, what, a gorilla suit, if I'm not mistaken? So, really funky stuff in this movie, but it's a damn solid comedy, if I do say so. Harold, I know it's been a minute since you've watched this one. When you look back on Trading Places, how do you think of this movie? Is this one you enjoyed watching? Is this one you kind of, you know, don't want to return to? What are your thoughts on it?
I remember it being funny. I remember it being, you know, having me interested towards the end, wondering how it was going to end up. So, I'd watch it again just to see how it holds up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'd be interested in going back to watch it again.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay, mm-hmm. I feel you. And Margaret, what about you? What are some of your general overall thoughts on Trading Places?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's a great movie. I feel like it's just a really, like, classic comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, watching it, because I just watched it today earlier, and the first thing I thought of was, like, this movie could have been made in, like, any era. Like, this could have been made in, like, the 40s with, like, Cary Grant, or, like, the 50s with, like, Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr. Could be made now. Like, it's just a very, like, timeless tale. And it just, I feel like it's a comedy that could fit in, like, any genre, or not genre, like, any time period.
Mm.
And, you know, as a Blues Brothers fan, one of my favorite parts is when Dan's getting out of prison and Frank Oz is once again guys in the prison giving him his stuff back, like in the Blues Brothers, and Winston's like number on his what's it called, like his mugshot, that's also Jake's number from the Blues Brothers, so that was like a little shout out to John, which I love.
Yeah, and John had passed away at this point too by filming, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah
this wasn't too long after he died. I'm not sure, like, exactly how many months.
I think it was
after he died that they filmed it.
Yeah, it was months, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this came out in 83 and John died in March of 82. So, Nice little nod to him. And also, fun fact, Giancarlo Esposito is one of the guys in the prison cell with Eddie Murphy, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like everybody just brought their A game. I mean, Eddie Murphy's amazing. Dan, it's just like, he's so likable that seeing him playing an asshole is just weird. But, I mean, he ends up playing a likable asshole by the end.
Sure.
So that, I mean, you just can't not love Dan. And Jamie Lee Curtis absolutely knocks it out of the park as well. And also, I love Jim Belushi's cameo, of course. And then also, more Blues Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
The scene where Dan is, one of my favorite parts is when Dan is standing outside and looking into the restaurant.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's raining. Yeah, the song that they're, I don't know what the song is called, but the song they're playing in that scene is the one they're playing at the Shea Paul scene of the Blues Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like that was a little Blues Brothers homage as well. And yeah, I like this whole movie. I feel like, I'm using my English major brain. that's how my brain works. But I really noticed today was I feel like one of the overall arching themes of this movie is like not judging a book by its cover. And like, you know, Winston automatically has his bad judgments about Billy and also Ophelia just because of their status in life and that he's above them. And, you know, like he automatically thinks like Billy's like a criminal and like an awful person, but, you know, he's like not. And like, he think like one of the first things he says to Ophelia is, oh, you're a prostitute. But she's like, she's a badass. She's incredibly smart. She's very driven. She's her own pimp. Like, she's fucking awesome. Like, go Jamie Lee Curtis.
I had no clue Jamie Lee was in this. So at first, upon watching it, I don't know why I got Jamie Lee mixed up with Carrie Fisher for a second. So I thought it was another Blues Brothers cut.
Oh my God.
But
yeah.
I always throw Carrie Fisher and Jamie Lee together for some reason. I just always do. Especially when they have the short haircut from the 90s stuff going on too. Uh-huh. They look alike. They do some similar roles. I love them. And to see now her be the love interest in a Dan Aykroyd film was so cool. Mm-hmm. I loved that.
Yeah. I think Jamie Lee said that Dan Aykroyd was the best on-screen kisser that she ever kissed.
Oh.
And then Carrie Fisher. Yeah, Carrie Fisher said the same thing about John Belushi. So,
Bullshit.
I'm living vicariously through them.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So, that's fine. I love this movie, man. This was an underrated, like, this was a sleeper for me. Like, I knew it was going to be solid because I love Dan Aykroyd, and obviously Eddie Murphy's holds up pretty well, too. But I was blown away by how much I really enjoyed this. Like, I haven't seen a movie that takes place in Philly other than Rocky that makes me love Philly in a long time, and this actually made me like Philly again. I don't know. This was a lot of fun to watch. This was really cool. Eddie Murphy holds up for me. It's been a hot, hot minute since I've seen anything with him in it, to be honest with you. Like, I don't think other than Shrek, I don't think I've seen a single Eddie Murphy movie the entire time we've done the podcast, to be honest with you, for the past 3 years. Like, I just don't watch a lot of his stuff like that. So to kind of be reminded, like, how awesome he is, especially was back in his prime, too. It's like, ah, man, like, this is fucking great. This is a solid-ass comedy movie. Definitely gonna watch this, you know, soonish again. You know, probably like next year or so I can see myself rewatching it. Definitely whenever I'm in a Dan Aykroyd mood, I'll put it back on. And to be honest with you, I don't really have any gripes of this thing. Like, this is just a solid movie throughout the whole thing, surprisingly. You know, you mentioned there's plenty of Blues Brothers references, which is pretty fun. There's some great cinematography going on here, some city shots. I like a lot of the B-roll stuff we see at the beginning of the film showing off Philly. Mm-hmm. You know, I love, for whatever reason, the shot when Eddie Murphy's on that cart when he's faking not having legs. We get the wide shot of him in the middle of the street. It's gorgeous. Like, this movie just looks fun. It's chaotic. It's hectic. I think the drunk Santa stuff of Dan Aykroyd is so over the top.
Oh, yes.
It's incredible. I hope to hell whenever they were doing production on Violent Night, that David Harbour Santa movie from a couple years ago, I hope they referenced images of Trading Places. Like, this, it's just a fun movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any gripes of this one at all, Margaret?
Me?
Yeah, is there anything you don't like about this one?
You know, I have issues with John Landis as a person, which I think a lot of people have, you know, Twilight Zone incident. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of issues. There's a lot of controversy with like the blackface stuff, but like I'm white. So I feel like I can't make an opinion about that. But I will say with that, what one of the things that annoys me with that is that John Landis, and have you watched the Belushi documentary?
Belushi. No.
Oh, we should do an episode on that, maybe. I don't know. I don't know if you do documentaries, but definitely check that out.
Okay.
But he talks about, there's one part where he like bitches about the Blues Brothers being blackface, which John and Dan have talked a lot about, how they got the ideas for the costumes, and that wasn't like the thing at all. And he starts bitching, like, oh, they were just trying to do blackface, but not actually do blackface, which wasn't the case. And then he puts blackface in the movie, and it feels rather hypocritical. Mm. And sometimes he tries to take credit for the Blues Brothers costumes, and he's like, oh, I gave them the sunglasses to hide that John was high. I'm like, bitch, they came up with the costumes, like, way before you were involved, so
I didn't shut know up. That. That's crazy.
So, yeah, John Landis is a bit of a dick. But he makes movies.
I love his movies. I love his movies.
Yeah, Animal House and Blues Brothers are both in my... Blues Brothers is my second favorite movie of all time after The Godfather. And
it's
Animal House
my
is
third.
Like 10, so, yeah.
Yeah, right for me, it's Empire Strikes Back, Rocky 2, Blues Brothers for me.
Oh, that's good. Mine's Godfather, Blues Brothers, then Empire.
Okay,
they're all
okay.
They're all kind of tied, though. And then Jaws is for number 4.
See, Chris gives me shit. I haven't seen Jaws yet still. I know. We're going to do it. I know Chris is listening to this thing.
You've
go fuck
never
yourself,
seen
Max.
Jaws?
I know.
Oh my
I know.
That's like, that's an all-time favorite of mine. My dad actually, I was talking about my dad reminding me of Egon, but he looked so much like Roy Scheider when he was younger. The first time I ever heard about Jaws, it was on the cover of TV Guide for some reason, because mm-hmm. I was born in 93, so I was like 2. So okay. It would have been 95. So I think it was like the 20th anniversary. It was like back when you used to get like the printed TV guides.
Yeah.
And I see the picture of him. And I go, Daddy, it's Daddy. My mom's like, that's not Daddy. And I like would not hear it. My 2-year-old self was like, that's Daddy.
Mm. That's crazy.
My nephew who's 5 saw a picture of Roy Scheider and Jaws as well and said, oh, that's Granddaddy. So yeah, Jaws is all time. Oh my God. Yes. Jaws is like the best. Ever. And then my 5th is Dog Day Afternoon.
But, okay. Good, solid picks. Yeah. I love it. I love to hear it.
Thank you.
Now, Harold, I need to hear from you real quick, dude. I know it's been a minute since you've seen Trading Places, so I'll wrap this up for you. What final comments do you have for this movie? What's your rating for based off memory?
So I should say you're not alone because I've never seen Jaws either.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Harold. God. I knew I could count on you.
Oh, my God. I'm hurt right now.
I've seen Jaws movies, but I've never seen any of them.
Okay.
The movie, right. Jeez, I probably really have to see it again, but going based on memories, I would say it's probably like a 4 out of 5.
Okay, so best, but okay.
Yeah, I legit only seen the movie because Dan Aykroyd was in it, because I was going on a Dan Aykroyd movie watching spree. I had seen that. I had seen Coneheads. I had seen...
Oh, Coneheads. Oh, my God.
What was it? Living with Spies or something like that?
Oh, something? Spies Like Us.
Oh, Spies Like Us.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, I was going on just the Dan Aykroyd movie watching spree, so I just wanted to watch everything he was in at the time. So I don't, you know, I didn't watch it because I was interested in it just because he was in it. And yeah, I was in this phase where I was like in love with the guy. I still am, but a little less crazy with it now.
I feel you, man. That's a solid rating for it, too. Yeah. I also love some Dan Aykroyd and love going on some binges with him. For me, this is the best finale to Coruscant. It just holds up. Like, John Landis can make a damn good movie. This is a fun time. I don't think it surpasses other Landis movies or Aykroyd movies. That's why my rating is what it is, but it's pretty solid. But Margaret, what are your final comments and rating for Trading Places?
I would say Bespin as well. I feel like kind of what you said about other Landis movies or Aykroyd movies. I feel like I haven't watched, like, I've watched Blues Brothers, Animal House many times.
Yeah.
Like, probably, like, I don't even... probably hundreds of times by now. Sometimes I'll watch Animal House like 5 days in a row and just not care. But I feel like this, I love this movie, but I feel like I'm a little more hardcore about like Blues Brothers, Animal House, Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
I even love 1941, so
okay.
But I think this is probably one of Dan's best movies, but I just like other things a little bit more. So, and I feel like, yeah, like I said, I haven't watched this one as much, but yeah, it's such a great movie. And you know, Jamie Lee Curtis's body in this movie is proof that God has favorites, and I'm not one of them.
Jamie Lee in this movie, dude, Jesus Christ. I love her so much.
if I can oh also if I could thirst over Dan a little bit, him with the bruise is like the hottest he's ever looked. Like, I don't know what it is, but damn Daniel.
Damn Daniel. Okay.
Am I allowed to be a little not safe for work on here?
Yeah, go for it. They're only the best three Galaxy okay. film.
When the first time I watched this, when Dan's getting out of prison, he goes, "Those men wanted to have sex with me." I'm like, "Yeah, me too. I'm playing them."
Jesus Christ. Be the deleted scene ghost from Ghostbusters. That's awful.
Oh my gosh.
Oh.
Well, guys. If we brought it. Yeah. I gotta be careful when we talk about John Belushi in here, because I need to censor myself.
Oh. Well, I don't think you got anything too much to worry about, Ellie. But, well, guys, I think it's going to go ahead and wrap it up for this week. It's been an awesome time talking about some Dan Aykroyd, of course, revisiting some Ghostbusters. Be sure to check out a link down below for our last Ghostbusters episode where we're talking the rest of them, of course. Harold, it's always a pleasure getting you on here, dude. If our listeners aren't following you already, where can they follow you, brother?
Wait, what did you say? I'm sorry, you went out.
Oh, where can the listeners follow you, bro?
I'm on all of my social media and my YouTube and Twitch as Gamer Harold.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have another YouTube channel where I do taste tests with my friends, Harold Dyson Entertainment. We just started recording more taste tests because, I mean, if I haven't mentioned it on the podcast since then, that I had to undergo surgery. So it's been a while since we recorded, and, you know, I'm happy to get back out there. So.
Hell yeah, I'm happy to see some new fucking content from you, dude. You guys have been on a spurt. I've been watching them, man. You guys got some great taste tests. I love them.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Oof. And Margaret, it's been an absolute pleasure getting you on here to make your Galaxy of Film debut, especially with such a fitting episode too. Where can our listeners find you?
So I have my YouTube channel, which is Margaret Corleone Blues. So Margaret, M-A-R-G-A-R-E-T, because a lot of people spell it, which is weird. But then Corleone, like the Godfather, and then Blues, like the Blues Brothers, of course. So I do a lot of like movie related things. I've done like videos talking about meeting Al Pacino. I'm a huge Star Wars fan, like since I was 2 years old. I don't know if I mentioned that earlier, but I watched Star Wars Holiday Special for the first time last year and filmed it. It was traumatic.
I've watched the Holiday Special, my friend got pepper sprayed in the face.
Wait, what?
I'll tell that story another time. But yeah, I understand the traumatic Holiday Special. Trust me.
Yeah, it's traumatic. So, and I also post like cosplay pictures there. And then I have two Instagram accounts you can follow. One of them is also Margaret Corleone Blues. That's like my main account, and I post like, you know, life stuff there, and my cat, who's very cute. And also, that's where I post my comedy stuff. And then I also have Darth Corleone Blues, and that's where I post more like promoting my YouTube content. Mm-hmm. And then I also post cosplays there, like my Zul cosplay. Which is amazing.
Nice.
If I do say so myself.
Nice. So, very nice.
Go give Zul some love.
Absolutely. Links down below, of course, guys. Check them all out. Be sure to check out next week's episode. We got a very special guest star coming on to talk some Goosebumps with us. Of course, the television show and the Jack Black film. But we got a lot lined up for the summer, so stay tuned. Got plenty of going on. Be sure to check out our newest short film, The Artist 1996, link down below. And also check out the trailer for my next film, Goonies in Agony. You can check out the rest of our content all at galaxyoffilm.com. And if you enjoy the show, please consider us leaving us an iTunes and Spotify review. It truly does help the show much more than you can imagine. And we will talk to you guys next week. Bye, guys.
Bye.